voice of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here, our second hour. Whoops, excuse me. I got Dr. Ron Tarner on the line. We're going to have our science segment here this hour. Ironically, it will be about antiquities, if you will, because we were talking about the Chinese bull last hour. That
What's antiquity?
Can you hold on, bud, so I can just get through maybe three sentences without you yelling?
That's a very good... I'm glad you said that, because every time Phil starts the hour, you...
You do, bud. I'm like, blah, 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 and then I hear...
But I don't know what antiquity means.
No, you don't have to find out right now, man. What you wish?
All right.
So now I'm going to start all over again. Welcome to the show. It's the Phil Hendry Show, and coming up is Dr. Ron Tarner, and he's going to be talking about antiquities.
What's it mean?
I'm going to belt you.
Would you shut up?
Antiquity means something that's old. You done? Is that good with you?
Sorry.
So Dr. Tarner, because we were talking about that, is going to be discussing, not because, but just it happens to be coincidental, is going to be talking about the Great Sphinx and why the Great Sphinx is missing its nose. And there's a lot of stories about that, and we're going to find, do you know that the Great Sphinx...
Well, it's very well known. The Great Sphinx's nose is gone. A lot of people thought, well, wasn't it sculpted that way? But in point of fact, there's a reason.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about that. But first, we want to tell you about our website, philhendryshow.com. There's a banner on our website where you can go directly to the various podcasts that we now offer at philhendryshow.com. And from the Phil Hendry Show, we've got two podcasts. One, of course, is our archive podcast. We have one from Bobby Dooley. And we also have a podcast right on the site itself of each day's show. So all you have to do is, if you're a subscriber to our website, you get the Daily Show's podcast. If you want to listen to our podcasts that are out on iTunes and SoundCloud and other places, you can click the banner there on the home site and go through to that. And, Bud, I know a lot of people were asking about the slides.
Yeah, I got sliding banners and stuff.
Those sliding banners that you see on the home site, you can stop and click on any one of those, and they'll take you directly to where you need to be, including where you can sign up for our backstage pass, $9.95 a month and 5,000 hours of audio. I don't know. I could be crazy, but that sounds like the deal of a lifetime to me.
5,000 hours of your show.
Of our show at $9.95 a month.
God help me. God help me and deliver me from how good I feel. Almost, well, it's almost sexual. And
all right. In any event,
I have a backstage pass.
Yeah, well, that's the one that you gave Frank.
I'm going to...
Hey. Well, you walk into that.
What do you mean I walked into it?
When you say around a guy like that, I've got a backstage pass, what do you think he's going to say?
Shut up, man.
Anyway, go to our website, philhendryshow.com, for more details. And pardon me for saying tail, bud. I'm sure you're going to have a crack about that.
Tail Gunner?
Is that supposed to mean Frank? Is that... I want an answer. Does that mean Frank?
What?
When you said tail gunner...
Will you come on, Margaret? God!
Well...
All right, Dr. Ron Tarner, always good to have you with us, especially on a day where I can't keep the... You know, the natives are restless here, Dr. Tarner. Great to be with you. How have you been?
Phil is doing very well. Thank you for having me on the program.
You're welcome. Hey, it's time for our science segment, and you do want to talk about the Great Sphinx of Egypt.
Phil, I don't think in life we have too many opportunities as we progress through each and every day to sort of step back into a time machine and look at the marvels of history and the marvels of the marvels of other ages and how other people live. But the Great Sphinx, which is in Egypt, is a wonderful opportunity for us to look at, well, rock strata, at the way the Egyptians lived, but specifically about one of the great mysteries of the Sphinx, the Sphinx is what I'm saying.
How do you spell Sphinx, by the way?
Sphinx is spelled S-P...
That was K.
No, it's not K. And Bud, this is Dr. Tarner. I know people give you a hard time. Would you just please...
Sorry, Doc.
It's S... What did you say, K?
No, I thought it was F. I'm sorry.
F.
Yeah.
No, it's not F. All right, we'll start all over again. Here's how you spell Sphinx. S-P-H... Let me see. Bud, you know that I like you. I think you're a good young man. Don't give me a hard time. I want to get through the report.
I agree with that. And, Bud, Dr. Turner's asking you.
I have respect for you, Bud. I'm just asking you to be quiet.
Yeah, I will. I'm sorry.
So Sphinx spell, getting back to what you asked me, how do you spell Sphinx?
Yeah, how do you spell Sphinx?
S-P-I-N-K-S. Sphinx.
No.
Oh, whoa, hold on. All of a sudden, I was thinking about Michael Sphinx. I don't know why.
Yeah, you gotta talk about Michael Sphinx.
Hold on.
Be quiet, Bud.
When he talks, everything...
People listen. That's the E.F. Hutton.
Yeah, it is. That's right.
Okay, you're starting to piss me off. Dr. Turner's getting pissed off. Margaret already left to go to the bathroom. Shut up.
Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome.
I was thinking about Leon Sphinx because I was confused by all the chit-chat. And they did call Leon Sphinx Dracula, and they called Michael Sphinx Dracula. And when I started thinking about Dracula, for some reason I started to think of the movie The Mummy, and that's how I made the connection between the Sphinx and Sphinx. So...
Interesting.
Is he being a smartass again?
Would you please, Bud?
Bud, please.
Yes, sir. When you said that...
I don't need you to comment. All right, Phil. So the Sphinx, in 1798, Napoleon came to Egypt. The Sphinx was buried in sand up to its neck. Between 1816 and 1858, a series of adventurers and antiquarians, including Giovanni Caviglia, August Mariette, and Gaston Maspari, attempted to clear the sand from around the body of the Sphinx, but were each forced to abandon the project due to the enormous amount of sand. Finally, in 1925 and in 1936, the French engineer Emile Barisi was successfully clearing the sand away. Now, Napoleon did arrive in Egypt in 1798, and it was the cannon practice, believe it or not, Phil, by Napoleon's troops that caused the nose of the Sphinx to eventually be shattered and to be destroyed because the French troops were taking target practice with the artillery.
You know, I heard that story, and it's amazing. Somebody thought it was the German troops in World War II.
No, this was much, much sooner. And the German troops in World War II were commanded by a man who was not what you would think of when you think of a German a Nazi general. They were commanded by Erwin Rommel, who was a very humane man. He was a man that respected life, was a good warrior, but it's very hard to imagine Erwin Rommel allowing his troops to destroy something as valuable and as certainly as ancient as the Sphinx. The story, though, is that it was Napoleon's troops taking target practice with their cannons that eventually got the nose of the Sphinx to get, you know, blown off.
Right. That's not true.
Yes, it's true, you idiot. You know.
All right, let hold on for a minute.
No, yes, it is true. I'm a doctor, all right?
Yeah, but you're an astronomer.
I don't care. I've done study. Do I have to put up with this?
What is it with you, Bud?
That's not, they don't know if that's a true story or not.
What don't they know?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
You for sure.
Bud, I could tell you that I've got more proof of what I'm saying than you have. That it isn't true.
I'm just saying that could be an old wives' tale.
An old wives' tale? What are you calling me anyway?
He's not calling you an old wife.
Well, pretty much he is. Isn't that right?
No, I'm just saying that they're not really sure.
Yes, they are sure.
All right, let's take a break. But I want you to leave the studio for a while here so we can...
I didn't do anything wrong!
Just get out of here, will you?
Get him out of there. Get him out of there before I go nuts.
Just get out of here, will you?
Didn't do anything wrong.
We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show and the Sphinx. How did it lose its nose? Well, according to Dr. Turner, Napoleon's troops, using it for cannon practice, blew the nose right off the Sphinx. We'll be back with more of this fascinating tale right after this on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And she didn't do anything wrong.
Is our bitch.
Get out of here, will you?
The Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, bud. Truth's a bitch, bud. Hey, bud.
Whatever.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Welcome back. Phil Hendry Show. Bud Dickman's been given, I guess, the closest thing I can call it is a timeout. And we're going to continue with Dr. Ron Tarner.
And by the way, Dr. Tarner, I admire you greatly. I do have some questions.
Margaret, that's fine. I don't mind answering questions. But when I have Dickman, and this is a very predictable thing, when I come on Phil's show, I'm not blaming Phil, but it is predictable. When I come on this show and I make a statement of fact, and I have Dr. in front of my name, that means doctor, and Mr. Dickman is heard to shout out from something that sounds like like he lives in a vault, and you can hear his voice echoing off the walls of the vault as he says, "No, it isn't."
Well, what do you mean in a vault?
Well, I mean, it's humiliating for a man who is a man of science like myself to be mocked and jeered by something living in a vault.
Why is that?
You don't make the connection.
No.
Because a scientist, if anything's in a vault, he made it and put it in there. So you're superior to that. You understand?
Yeah, okay. I mean, so in other words, because Bud would be representative...
Bud is representative of something that I made in my laboratory and then stuck in the vault. And now he's telling me how it is? I don't think so.
Wow, that's...
What does that mean, wow?
Well, it's not the way a regular... We're civilians. You're the doctor.
That's correct.
All right. And so we don't think the way you think, Dr. Tarner. That's quite... It's interesting.
Well, it's how it is when you're a doctor or a scientist.
All right, so I mean, so listening to anybody whose voice echoes off a vault?
No, I'm saying not echoes off a... If he's clearly an imbecile and his voice is echoing as if... I'll give you an example. My brother-in-law used to talk to me through the door of the bathroom, and I know that Margaret... I'm not making the comparison to you, but Phil often gets upset with you because you're talking through the door of the bathroom.
Well, yeah, because he's got to be on mic.
All right, but you do get upset.
Yeah.
All right, well... It's not that Phil thinks you're stupid, because I know he doesn't, but there may be something in Phil's genetic makeup, what we call the racial memory, that when he hears your voice bouncing off of tile, he may be remembering a past life when he had a...
Well, like a ghoul in the vault.
Yes, and I use the word a ghoul in the vault.
I am not a ghoul.
No one's saying you are, Margaret, and I'm not even saying I agree with Dr. Tarner. A past life?
Well, that's not scientific, I understand that, but the theory was put forth by Dr. Robert Jaber, who was at our, we call it as a joke, the Ghoul Roundtable. Now, what it really is a an annual meeting that we have on papers and discussions that originate on the creation of life.
And you call that the Ghoul Roundtable?
As a joke. Jesus.
All right, well, we're talking with Dr. Ron.
No, you got to, Phil, you got to lighten up.
Do I got to lighten up? You're telling me.
Can we get back to me? I'm the doctor and I'm the guest.
All right, fine. So when your brother...
When Bud was yelling at me and it was echoing off of... Whatever he's sitting in there.
He's in our studio, so what you were hearing was the soundproofing in our studio, which I guess isn't very good.
Yeah, I guess it isn't. Otherwise, it wouldn't have sounded like it was bouncing off the walls of a crypt.
And you had some kind of a genetic reaction.
Can we just move on, Phil? Because I'm not going to keep explaining this to you, all right? It sounded like...
Have you ever... Well, maybe I shouldn't ask this.
No, you shouldn't. Now, moving on to the Sphinx...
Wait, hold on. What shouldn't she ask?
Believe me, Phil, just leave it alone, will you? Please, just leave it alone.
No, Dr. Tarner, I think I need to ask it. Have you been involved in experiments?
Damn you to hell, Henry.
What did I do?
Damn you.
Have you been involved in experiments in creating artificial life?
You're kidding.
Well, what do you think's going to happen when I go to a ghoul round table? Am I going to sit there? What am I talking about? How to grow strawberries? Yes. All right. Damn you, yes.
I thought so.
Well, okay, so you're involved in a seminar on how to create artificial life. Are we talking about Frankenstein here? Are we talking about Frankenstein here, Doc?
Something worse. Much worse.
I knew it.
Well, what are you talking about?
Do you recall a series of murders that were committed? Do you recall a series of murders that were committed in northern Nova Scotia in the late 80s?
No, I don't.
I do. The Remminger murders.
That's correct. Something that I had been working on at a laboratory that I had rented. I needed peace and I needed quiet to finish my work. I rented a small laboratory in the northern part of that province late one summer, the late 80s. I remember that I had, at the time, just buried my ex-wife, my now ex-wife, Candy, Cindy, I don't remember.
It's funny how many guys we have on the show that don't remember the names of their wives.
Can I finish?
Go ahead.
Well, forget it.
Why are you saying that?
Because I'm not going to tell a story while a laughing boy there is.
I'm laughing because I don't believe anything you guys are saying, okay?
Well, Phil, all I know is I'm a journalist, and I remember the stories coming across the wire.
Okay?
No, no, not okay. Not okay. What's your name? What's your wife's name?
What do you mean, what's my name?
What's your wife's name? Candy, Cindy, I forget. Northern Nova Scotia, huh?
That's right.
What was the name of the town?
You were going to say village.
Because Nova Scotia is a small province in Canada. It's not a very populous country. God knows how many people are in Nova Scotia. I don't know. So what was the name of the village? All right, I'll call it that.
Well, it was a town. It wasn't a village.
All right, what was the name of it?
It was... Boy, you think I'm a liar, don't you?
I think you guys are full of crap.
Phil, I didn't say he created a ghoul. I'm simply saying that he might have had something to do with the murders.
I didn't murder anyone. I can tell you that right now.
Okay, then what are you talking about?
No, I don't think I'm going to tell you now.
Okay. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to call up whatever passes for the legal authority there in whatever part of Nova Scotia you're talking about, and I'll tell them I happen to know a guy down here in the United States who says that he had something to do with the Remminger murders in northern Nova Scotia.
All right, I'll talk about it.
Yeah, huh?
It was a hoax.
Why?
Because I wanted to have a paper to present at the Ghoul Seminar. Okay? You know the problem I've got with Hawking? You know that every year he was coming up?
So this gets back to Stephen Hawking again. Every single thing.
Is this this jealousy of Stephen Hawking?
Yes. Hawking. Every time I turn around, it's Hawking. Here comes a pretty girl. Must be Hawking's. Oh, look at that. A brand new hoveround. I guess Hawking ordered a few of them. Hey, did you hear a joke? Oh, let me guess. Did Hawking write it? Have you heard about this magazine? Hawking found it. Take a look at the breasts on that. It's Hawking's woman. Over and over and over again.
And so you decided to pretend like you created some creature to get some of the thunder away from Hawking.
Because Hawking had made advances in the study of amino acids. It looked as if Hawking was going to break through the amino acid barrier and was actually going to create the basic amino acids of life.
Where was this?
At his laboratory, like everybody has one.
Well, all I knew, Phil, is that these ridiculous stories, and that was a hoax.
Yes.
Did you get arrested?
No, I didn't get arrested. We were let off with a reprimand.
How old were you at the time?
27.
27-year-old man.
Phil, I was looking to bust out. I needed some publicity.
So you dummy up some murders committed by a Frankenstein monster, and you're the guy that did it. I'm ashamed of you. I'm ashamed that I'm talking to you. I'm ashamed that I kicked Bud out of the studio because he was bugging you.
Well, are you telling me I'm full of crap about Napoleon, too?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, Phil.
No, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Can I come back in?
Yes, sit down.
It's always pocket.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I really got to apologize for that. That was absolutely the most childish bunch of it just blows my mind, you know?
I didn't do any of it.
Shut up before I swear to God, man. What are they? Maybe, you know, before the beginning of summer, before the beginning of summer 2013, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to belt you, bud, so hard, man, that I'll go to jail for it. I blame you partially for that.
Yeah, but I didn't make up the stuff. Bud didn't make it all up.
I've got to go with Bud on this. He didn't make up the Remminger murders.
I don't even know if such a thing ever happened.
No, it didn't happen.
No, I mean, I don't even know that there was a hoax called the Remminger murders. I don't know anything. This guy, Turner, we've had him on the show. He's got such a problem with Dr. Stephen Hawking that he's got this competition going that he dummied up murders by a creature that he created just so he could get some publicity away from Stephen Hawking.
Phil, some people are obsessed that way. Some people are obsessed that way.
You imagine a guy being that sick? You're going to make up a ghoul? You didn't make up a ghoul, man. You talk about a ghoul. Well, yeah.
He did make up a ghoul. He wanted people to think he made up some creature in a laboratory. And every time he hears someone's voice echoing off of tile, it's like a...
What?
It's like a ghoul in the vault. All right, so thanks a lot for nothing, Doc, wherever you are. The Sphinx, we still don't know how it lost its nose. How's that?
It's calling in. No. Phil didn't want you on.
Put him on.
Yeah, same to you. You're the guy that did it.
Put him on, bud. Hey, Doc.
And I'll tell you something else. Are we on the air?
Yeah.
Okay, that guy there, that Dickman, I'd love to get a blood test on him. Because I'll tell you, I've never created artificial life. You're right. I've never done that. I lied.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, if Dickman isn't a refugee from someone's laboratory, I swear to God,
That's it.
Yeah, see? What'd he say?
You're not listening. He says you're a refugee from someone's laboratory. You were created.
I bet you that's true. Shut up. That's you were created. In Blackula's laboratory. Oh, man, you know something, man? You are so lame. I can't even get offended by what you say anymore.
Yeah, you are pretty lame, bud. Discovery Duck is special uncovers the secrets of the KKK. Speaking of laboratories and bullcrap. Wednesday night, Discovery Channel will air a one-hour special, KKK Beneath the Hood.
Well, what are you laughing at?
I just think it's pretty funny. Title, if you think about it.
Yeah, Beneath the Hood. Oh, yeah, like a car.
Yeah. KKK Beneath the Hood. Let's get in there and tinker around. That delves into the truths and secrets behind one of the largest surviving white supremacist organizations, the Ku Klux Klan. This exclusive clip from the docu-special reveals that the organization, which was formed on Christmas Eve of 1865, the same year the American Civil War ended, began in an unexpected way as a sophomoric gag. As a gag. In his first televised interview, Richard Bondurant, a traditionalist American Knights member, talks about the Klan's surprising origins. According to Bondurant, the group began innocently enough in a law office in Pulaski, Tennessee. Six Confederate Civil War veterans were deciding how to occupy their time now that the war was over. And they agreed that forming a mysterious organization similar to college fraternities in which they could engage in pranks and hazing would be fun. It was during this time that the name Ku Klux Klan was conceived. At first, the name was not intended to be menacing. Bondura said Ku Klux was a variation of the Greek word kyklos, which means wheel or band. It wasn't long, though, before the organization turned violent and terrorist. In 1869, the first era of the Klan disbanded under pressure from the federal government, but factions of the KKK continued to exist to this day. Discovery was able to gain access via acclaimed photojournalist Anthony Karen, who has long documented the secret world of the Klan, as well as white nationalists, the Westboro Baptist Church, the Maricopa County Jail, and more. What's with the Maricopa County Jail?
I don't know. I think that's the sheriff down there. Sheriff,
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, what's the guy's name? I don't know. Sheriff of Cochise County.
Sheriff of Cochise County. That, whoever the sheriff is, boy, they're lumping him in with the Westboro Baptist Church and the white nationalists and the wow, you know.
And the wow?
No, I'm just saying. In this additional clip, see, they've got clips that accompanied the story, so forget about that. We'll show you the clips later on. More little-known aspects of Klan members' existence are revealed, specifically that there was an entire pop culture movement exclusive to the Klan. Bondura shares his collection of KKK artifacts. Now, keep in mind, the guy that they're talking to, this guy Richard Bondura, is a traditionalist American Knights member. Does that mean he's in the Klan?
Well, it sounds like it, yes.
Well, I'm talking about a traditionalist American Knight.
I don't know what that means. Is that a Klansman, or is that just some guy that's in an organization called the Traditionalist American Knights?
It's got to be the Klan.
Why?
Well, they use that word Knights.
Knights of Columbus? You think they're in the Klan?
Well, I think the jury has to be out on something like that, don't you?
My father was in the Knights of Columbus. You trying to tell me that they're Klan?
Why do you use the word Knights?
Why does anybody use the word Knights? A knight is a warrior.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd think they'd lose it now.
What was your father's attitude? I mean, I'm not saying he was. What was his attitudes toward black people?
My dad was completely and totally cool with the races. He didn't have any, never used, what are you talking, Knights of Columbus. Hello.
Yeah, but they're Catholic, and I know that you say, and you're a good guy, but yeah, the Catholics are kind of weird.
Oh, get out of here. Knights of Columbus, the Catholics are weird. Well, I'll give you that. Catholics are weird, but no weirder than anybody else. The Knights of Columbus. You got to be kidding me.
But he's saying it's Knights. They got to change their name, otherwise there's suspicion on it.
Well, I wouldn't say they have to change their name.
Margaret, you know, I'm surprised at you. Just because they use words. Should we start thinking of, like, King Arthur, Knights of the Round Table?
Who are they? Yeah, what are they about?
Let's see. They don't exist, number one. They're part of legend, number two. It was King Arthur, number three, who lived way back in the beginning of whatever the hell, number four.
And number five was the Klan.
Yeah.
No, they weren't Klan. They were in England, and it was way before America was invented. And it didn't even exist. It was a made-up story.
Yeah, but still could be a made-up story about a Klan.
Look, man, Knights doesn't mean Klan. Knights is a word that is used for traditional warrior. Got nothing to do with Klan. The Klan took it. The Klan took the cross. The Klan's taken all kinds of stuff and turned it into Klan stuff. Hey, Robert, the cross. Did the Klan invent that?
No. That's a very good point.
Thank you, Dr. Dickman. Anyway, Bondura shares his collection of KKK artifacts. Why, how nice. Something he's never done with non-Klan members. There, right there, the guy's in the Klan.
Told you.
Anyway, he calls these pop culture relics the Great Lost Mystery and reads off some titles from the Klan's albums. The Klansman and the Rain, We Belong to the Ku Klux Klan, and the Gathering Klan. At the time, these albums were widely available at record and department stores, according to Mr. Bondura. In 1915, the second iteration of the KKK had emerged. According to the documentary, the second era of the Klan, which was relatively mainstream at this point, grew to tremendous numbers. They had approximately 4 million members by 1925 and was not necessarily stronger in the South than in the North. The Klan back in the early part of the 20th century was huge, and they had big parades, you know.
Well, why is that?
I don't know. Maybe if we read on here. The popularity of the organization at that time resulted in some high-profile members. It is speculated that Harry Truman, 33rd president of the United States, was a member of from 1920 to 1922, but his family to this day denies it. On the other hand, Warren G. Harding was actually sworn in as a Klansman in the White House. No topic is taboo in this Discovery special event, from cross-burning ceremonies to in-depth interviews with Klansmen of all ranks. Filmmakers even go inside the home of a Klan family.
Why did the Klan get powerful?
I bet you I know the reason. I mean, I'm speculating, but at the turn of the century, because of the emerging labor movement in this country, there was conflict between workers, and there was conflict between the owners of companies, the owners of these plants, and there was violence. Now, that wasn't necessarily the reason that I would give for the Klan's emergence. What was the result of that immediately was a thing called the movement of the anarchists. Anarchists were people that decided that violence was the best way to solve the problems of the workers in this country. Workers were being treated very poorly. They did not have the protections they have today. They were worked 12 hours a day. They were worked 6 days a week. Nonetheless, when the companies decided to, break these strikes by violent means, and that included the use of firearms and, opening fire on these crowds of striking workers, the workers themselves brought in their own guys, and there were these pitched battles. Then along came the anarchists, and the anarchists not only targeted the companies and corporations, they targeted individuals. In the case of one anarchist, they targeted the President of the United States.
Who?
William McKinley was killed by an anarchist. If that had happened to, if a communist had actually killed Kennedy, that would have been if they would have found absolute proof that Lee Harvey Oswald was a commie, it would have been a much, much more disturbing time in the history of this country, and there would have been probably a far greater reaction to it. As it was, an anarchist killed McKinley. And then comes the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. So these traditional American, you want to call them values, but the traditional American structure, the traditional American lifestyle at that time was being challenged by anarchists, by Bolsheviks, by striking workers, all kinds of stuff.
And so the Ku Klux Klan came along to solidify American life.
I think they came along as a traditional group to say, enough is enough. We're the Klan, and we're not going to have it. Look what happened when you freed the slaves. Look what happened in the Civil War. Look at all that stuff. See, now we're going nuts.
Oh, that sounds like a bunch of hooey.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Well, fine. I'm just giving you my theory. I don't know if that's the facts.
Not all that stuff about the Ku Klux Klan was formed because on a what?
Anarchists.
That's the same as a commie, huh?
Look, you guys, I'm done. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, Phil, don't take your ball and go home.
Look it, man, I'm just giving you an opinion. I'm not telling you guys. You can give me your own theories when we come back. Okay, bud? Does that sound good to you?
I might need to take a poke at it, yeah.
You want to take a poke at this?
Hey, what?
Watch it. What are you pointing at your crotch for?
You're joking.
We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I don't want to be embarrassing anybody. I certainly don't want to embarrass Dr. Tarner any more than he already has been. But the Sphinx story of the nose getting blown off by Napoleon's, what are you looking at, bud?
Well, should say cannon.
Look, I'm going to tell you guys once and for all, just because I use the word blow or blown off doesn't mean I've got to qualify it with excuse my language.
Well, you don't know.
Well, I'm a woman and I don't appreciate it.
You don't appreciate what? Because I said they blew his nose off? Good God, are we getting sensitive around here, man. I'll tell you what, thank God for podcasts. I don't have to apologize for anything there.
You never know, people are going to tell you to apologize.
I ain't apologizing for nothing. I've never apologized for anything, and I never will. On the air, anyway. And they blew off his nose, okay?
Yeah, man, you can say that you blew your nose.
Don't say blew your nose, say blow your nose.
That's what I mean.
Well, still, I'm not going to be running around going, oh, I blew my nose, I blew my nose.
You're a lady, you can't.
What are you talking about?
Phil, just never mind. Go on with your story.
You're a lady, she can't say...
Never mind, Phil.
Yeah, just go on with the story.
Hey, bud, don't wave your hand at me like I'm, working for you, okay? The Sphinx has no nose, and this is because, according to a documentary that the author of this particular article that I'm reading, when he was an eight-year-old, they told him that the Sphinx had no nose in this documentary because Napoleon's troops blew the nose off during cannon practice. But that is not necessarily the truth. So it turns out Dr. Tarner didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground, and you were right, bud.
See?
All right, but wait. No one knows how the Sphinx lost its nose. See? No one knows what happened to the nose there. There's a little bit of whimsy. Huh?
I don't get it.
Neither do I.
No one knows what happened to the nose. In any event...
Yeah, that's all right.
Well, sorry. In any event, there is a writer, for instance, who wrote an article about Hollywood distorting and trashing Egyptian history. His name is Tim Ryan. He wrote this article around March of 2000. Maybe it was around the time that The Mummy came out. I don't know, the one with... Brendan Fraser, but nonetheless, he wrote this article saying that Hollywood had done such a terrible job in distorting and bashing and ripping apart Egyptian history. And then he reported bitterly that Napoleon's soldiers once used the Sphinx's nose for target practice.
So he got it wrong, even as he was trying to protect Egyptian history.
Yes. Some Egyptian government websites still repeat this, quote, libel that Napoleon Bonaparte certainly committed many crimes, but desecrating the Great Sphinx is not one of them, but they do report that he did. Bonaparte apparently brought with him to Egypt all kinds of scholars, people that could study Egyptian history and aspects of Egyptian culture. The reason was there was a dawning fascination in Europe with what they called in those days Orientalism, that which is non-European. And harming a cultural treasure like the Sphinx simply did not match the practice of the French in Egypt at that time. The British, on the other hand, who later occupied Egypt, were a much more cavalier with their treatment of various antiquities, including mummies. The British used to stoke their fires with mummified, you know, bodies and so-called mummified humans and sacred cats. They would find these...
What are you talking about? A real cat?
No, man, a mummy.
You're telling me they mummied up a cat?
They didn't mummy it up. They mummified it.
Well,
they had mummy cats.
Yeah.
Wow, that blows me away. I had no idea. So they mummied, well, not mummied up, but they mummified. Did they mummy up a dog? I'm not mummy up a dog.
They didn't mummy up. I don't know what they mummied up. And don't say mummied up. It's mummified.
Well, I'm just using a shorthand.
Did they mummy it up?
Mummy up what, man?
Dogs.
I don't know. They mummied up. Would you guys knock it off with the mummied up? It's mummified. They mummified dogs. They mummified humans.
But stands to reason you mummy up a dog.
They didn't mummy up any dogs that I'm reading.
See, you're saying it, Phil, so we might as well use it. Did they mummy up a dog or did they not?
I don't think so.
Why do you say that?
Because I've never heard of mummied up dogs, okay?
Now you're saying mummied up.
The vandalism enraged Egyptian peasants living near the Great Sphinx. Apparently, the vandalism that was committed by Sufi Muslims and their leader, the fanatical Muhammad Sayyim al-Dahar, in 1378. He attacked the Sphinx with a crowbar, apparently in a solo effort.
Why did they have a crowbar in 1378 when they didn't have hubcaps? I'm just kidding.
That's pretty good, Miss Gray.
Thank you.
In any event...
What's wrong with you, Phil?
Yeah, Mr. Ray, you're all, like, bummed out and everything.
Would you guys shut up and let me finish, okay? You got me talking about mummied up a dog and crowbars for hubcaps, and I can't even get into the story about this Sphinx thing. The reason why Tarner came on here was to talk about this. Then we got into it with him, and he starts telling us about how he created some ghoul that committed murders in Nova Scotia, and that turned out to be bullcrap, and we had to force him off the air, otherwise be the laughingstock of whatever's left of our listening audience.
Yeah, but it's a good thing you pointed it out anyway.
Yeah, sure. Fantastic. I think that he's right in one instance, but I think you were created in a laboratory.
I don't care.
You don't care if you were created?
No.
Man, I'd care if I was created.
Why?
I wouldn't know when my mom and dad was.
Well, you done? You finished?
What?
Are you finished talking about being created in a laboratory?
Well, I look at these two, and that's got to be the truth. There's got to be something to that.
Yeah, well, I don't care. Maybe you was created in a laboratory.
I doubt it, seriously.
Okay.
Phil, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Phil.
I'm going to get up and leave. You guys can finish the show there yourselves.
I don't know how to do that.
Well, you sure do know how to run your big fat mouth.
You're
talking about who was made up in a laboratory, and I'm trying to figure out how the Sphinx lost its nose. Which do you want to talk about?
The Sphinx.
Thank you. The Sphinx was not nearly as impressive in 1798 as it is today. The bulk of the beast had been covered for years by blowing sand, and only the head stood clearly above ground. The sand would not be totally cleared away until 1905, although evidence suggests this clearing had been performed multiple times in the past. Unlike the pyramids, most of the Great Sphinx is carved from the living rock. Only some parts are imported stone, and it's unclear how much of this was original or the result of later repairs. And unlike other Sphinx statues set in pairs as guardians, the Great Sphinx stands alone. There you go.
So what happened to the nose?
I don't know. No one knows. No one knows what happened to the nose. Napoleon didn't do it. They say that Napoleon would never think of doing something like that. So that's bull crap. You know what I think happened? I think it fell off.
Yeah, right.
It fell off. It got old and fell off. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Oh my God.
Shut up.
Phil Hendry.